It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Over the next 5 years, 50,000 Congolese will be resettled in the United States by the State Department. A few thousand of them will be moving to Pittsburgh. Many of them will come without any English and with trauma, depression, and other scars of war. They'll be in need of mental health services. But as 90.5 WESA's Erica Barris reports, many providers and the Pittsburgh Congolese community fear those services aren't going to be there.
On a Sunday morning in December, nearly 100 people are in a West End church dedicating their prayers to Claudine Mukankindi. It's been a year since she died of a heart attack. At the time of her death, she was 36 years old. In a pew near the front is Adeline Kiona, dancing and chanting in worship. Tears in her eyes, as they always are, whenever she speaks of her deceased friend.
She was like a part of, you know, my family. When she passed away, it was like I lost a sister.
When Claudine Mukankindi arrived in Pittsburgh in 2001, it was after surviving the Rwandan genocide, enduring countless acts of violence and loss of family. She had fled to the Congo and then to Kenya, then Cameroon, before being resettled in Pittsburgh by Catholic Charities. With the exception of the young daughter she brought with her, she didn't have family, but she quickly became close to Adeline Kiona. With Kiona, with whom she shared Congolese roots, she also shared much of what she experienced before arriving in the U.S.
Claudine saw a lot of stuff. I don't know if I can say like some of them. They were raping women. And Claudine saw all of that. And they did that to her. And they killed even her uncle in her eyes. She saw a lot.
In her time in the U.S., she was diagnosed and treated for a slew of mental illnesses. Among them, PTSD. Trauma is pervasive in the Congo and other conflicted and post-conflict countries. Lynn Laurie from Harvard Medical School has studied mental health issues there. A 2010 study she conducted in the Congo found that half of all adults exhibited symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. In contrast, in the U.S., that number is between 5 to 10% of the population. Despite those high numbers, Lowry says there are little to no mental health services in the Congo.
Most of the countries that I go to, which are countries in conflict or post-conflict, there may be one psychiatrist or two psychiatrists available, which was the case for Democratic Republic of Congo.
Lowry says different cultural norms in the Congo may not allow people to realize that what they are experiencing is a form of mental illness. When people emigrate, those attitudes are exported.
Back home, people don't know any other diagnosis of mental health than just being crazy in general.
That's John Alumba, a Congolese man who was resettled in Pittsburgh around the same time as Claudine Mukankindi. He, too, had experienced traumatic events. One has left an enduring physical scar, a gunshot wound followed by days of hiding in fear without medical attention resulted in him losing his right arm. For the first 8 months refugees are in the U.S., they receive federally subsidized medical assistance that covers their medical needs. When Alumba arrived, he was fitted for a prosthetic arm, but he says he was never offered mental health care, even though in retrospect, he might have benefited from it.
It was very difficult, you know, because you don't go to sleep without, especially at the beginning, you keep dreaming about all those things. You feel like somebody's going to come to get you. No, you have all those bad dreams, you know, keep dreaming the same thing over and over.
Even though he struggled in the Congo and in the United States, if mental health services had been offered to him, Alumba doesn't know if he would have partaken.
No, you don't want to just, you know, be keep talking about everything, then you feel, oh, what they're going to think about me when I say all of those things. So you try, I'll try to withhold some information, say, well, maybe I'll just, you know, overcome this and someday I'll feel better.
Not everyone who experiences trauma develops post-traumatic stress disorder. It's not known why some people develop PTSD and others don't. Alumba ended up working as a caseworker for several years with Catholic Charities, the same group that resettled him. He says he often thinks about his friend Claudine Mukankindi, if her life would have been different if she had received mental health services immediately upon her arrival to the U.S.
I think there was a big missed opportunity when she came to try to stabilize her. I think she should have gotten mental health care and followed through the entire treatment program.
In Claudine Mukankindi's first few years in the U.S., she learned English and made friends within the Congolese community. There were also hospital visits and loss of mental stability. Along the way, she lost custody of her daughter, which friends say devastated her. In 2006, she ended up at Bethlehem Haven, a homeless shelter.
She was here when...
She spent the last few years of her life at Bethlehem Haven's long-term supported homeless shelter for women with severe mental illness. In the years Claudine Mukankindi was at Bethlehem Haven, her daughter was adopted by her friend Adeline Kiona. Her mental health was stabilized. She got a job. And in 2010, she became a U.S. citizen. But last December, at the age of 36, she died unexpectedly. Lois Mafuka Martin is the shelter's executive director.
Trauma doesn't just affect the mind, it affects the body. In our world of homelessness, you know, we've been known to say that for every year a person is homeless, it ages them up to 10 years.
Although the World Health Organization and the State Department recognize that many refugees are coming with trauma upon arrival, and the CDC has guidelines for mental health screenings, those that work in the resettlement agencies and those who have gone through the screen say the screen is weak. And the screenings done before refugees come to the U.S. are for communicable diseases like tuberculosis. Martin says many of the problems Mukankindi faced are pervasive within the refugee community. With a growing refugee population in Pittsburgh, she says there's been talk within the mental health community that while Pittsburgh may have housing and employment for them, there may not be supportive services in place.
Mental health is grossly underfunded as it is. So what I'm hearing in a general conversation is how do we absorb additional populations, be they indigenous or not? How do we absorb them into systems?
One way, maybe grassroots. Rebecca Check spent her childhood in the Congo and frequently returns. She's on the Congolese Resettlement Committee Allegheny County has set up to address some of the issues they may face. She says many of the refugees they're expecting are single mothers, women who may have some of the same vulnerabilities as Claudine Mukankindi. Check is working with others in the established Congolese community to set up homegrown support systems and connect new refugees to mental health services.
You're talking about people who've been victimized. So it's trust comes really slowly, and it's very difficult to talk about some of the things that have happened to them, and there's not a culture in Congo of that kind of support outside of family and friend networks.
Similar efforts are also underway in the Bhutanese and Somalian refugee communities in Pittsburgh. I'm Erica Barris, 90.5 WESA News.
Erica Barris's reporting on refugees in Pittsburgh was undertaken as a National Health Journalism Fellow at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School of Journalism. Also, for an extended version of the story, go to the WESA website, our website, wesa.fm. And Erica Barris joins us in Studio A to discuss her month-long series on the challenges of refugees in the Pittsburgh area to obtain health care. Hello, Erica.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the program. Also taking part in the discussion by phone is William Heisel, project editor for the Reporting on Health Collaborative. William Heisel, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. If you are or know someone who is a refugee trying to obtain health care, what challenges have you or they faced? Share the story with us at 412-246-2002. Erica, let's begin with you. Tell us how this project came about.
Well, this project came out of my everyday reporting here in Pittsburgh on health issues. And I've been here almost 5 years, 5 years next month. And one of the things that in the time that I've been here has happened is the refugee community here has grown and grown. And in that time, I've been talking to providers. I've been in just different situations at the specialty courts. And I keep hearing stories about different refugees who have come in with different issues and how people are struggling to meet those their needs, how they don't quite have a system in place for after the first few months that a refugee is in town.
So in terms of helping these refugees, we heard a little bit about it in the story that we just ran. But what have you learned about what is being done for these refugees and what else needs to be done in terms of shepherding them through a system that even somebody who grew up in Pittsburgh and speaks perfect English has a difficult time oftentimes navigating?
Well, I mean, I think that's it exactly. I think, you know, the healthcare system is difficult to navigate no matter who you are and no matter how many resources you have. And then immediately, as soon as you start complicating it and you add that a person may not speak the language, they don't have sort of cultural competency where they don't understand how these different systems here work or how health insurance works. They might not have financial means. They might not be able to verbalize, you know, different ailments that they're experiencing. All of those things together make it a much more complicated process. And there's not always a person there to help each person who's here navigate this system.
Tell us about the reporting process for the story.
Well, this particular story came about I had been working on this series I'm working on is six stories, and I'd been working on another story that I ended up not working on. And that was going to be about Pittsburgh Action Against Rape and their work that they've done with rape victims and women who are here who either came from countries where they'd experienced sexual violence or who are here and they've experienced it here. And then in working on that story, someone mentioned this woman's story. They just mentioned, oh, Claudine, and they started talking about her. And it was such a compelling story. And it seemed as if every person I met had some sort of story connected to it. You know, people had known her. They had met her at different hospitals. They sort of knew about her, and it's almost like they hold it up as sort of a cautionary tale. Like, you know, they somehow managed to help out this woman. Her daughter's been adopted. She's doing fine. But what's going to happen when there's, you know, 2,000 other people that are just like her here? Can they all come together to help every person if they can?
Bill, what scientific evidence is there for the links between immigration status and health?
So the fact that there are links between immigration status and health has been clearly established through repeated studies in multiple countries. But it's important to understand that a person's healthcare experiences are very much shaped by their particulars of that experience. So, for example, studies have shown that refugees who have suffered from violence have higher rates of depression and anxiety. South Asian immigrants, for example, are more likely to have coronary artery disease than Caucasians in the U.S. Then at the same time, you see studies about the children of immigrants, and in some cases they have lower rates of asthma and lower rates of attention deficit disorder and lower rates of learning disabilities. So the immigration status can have a positive, it seems, health effect as well as a negative health effect, like the challenges that Erica described.
Are you finding that, and this is a collaborative journalistic effort with different entities around the country. So Erica has tapped into what's going on in Pittsburgh. But Bill, I think our audience might be curious to know about what's happening in the United States and with these refugees coming from areas of conflict, coming from areas where there is quite a bit of lawlessness. They are suffering from trauma that maybe the average American does not. Are you finding that the system is prepared to deal with their specific mental health and overall health needs?
Mental health is an area that, in general, health systems have struggled to adequately address. And when you're talking about refugees, they're coming with acute needs that, not in all cases, are systems prepared to address. And so within the U.S., people also suffer all types of trauma and PTSD and issues that they struggle with. But refugees are coming from conflicts that most of us will never experience. And so they, in addition to having the trauma that they need to get over, they have language barriers that make it difficult for them to access health care. Many of them have low-income status. They're disconnected from their communities. And so we are seeing this throughout the U.S., that this is a pretty big challenge.
And, Bill, what can you tell us about how the different news services, including, of course, 90.5 WESA, how this convergence came about to focus on this particular area of need in the United States?
Well, it grew pretty organically, Erica and the other reporters and editors on the project had been fellows in the National Journalism Program that USC Annenberg sponsors through funding from the California Endowment. And each of them had decided to focus on an area that they thought was interesting in their communities. And it turned out, whether it was New America Media in New York or Radio Bilingue in Oakland or Univision in Los Angeles and then also in Phoenix, that they all had these stories about different communities, whether they are undocumented immigrants, whether they are guest workers working here legally, whether they are refugees, who have different health struggles that are connected directly to their nationality and to their immigration status. So we decided to combine those together and look at it holistically and see what the through lines are. And Erica's series is a great way to kick it off.
And we are talking here on Essential Pittsburgh with Erica Barris of 90.5 WESA staff, who is doing a month-long series on the challenges of refugees in the Pittsburgh area to obtain health care. Also with us by phone, whom you just heard, William Heisel, project editor for the Reporting on Health Collaborative. Erica, you touched on it a bit earlier, but what are the important things that people need to know about the refugee community in Pittsburgh and who is here?
Okay, well, there are, I think, and this most people are surprised to hear this if they don't work within these communities, but there are a few thousand refugees here in Pittsburgh right now. I think the numbers vary depending on who you ask. And, you know, sometimes people will still include people even after they've become citizens. They'll include them at, they'll still consider them refugees. And a lot of people have children once they're here, and that's also included in those numbers. But there are a few thousand. The biggest population with somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 is the Bhutanese Nepalese community. And that's all happened in the last 6 years, which is a huge number. A lot of those people have been resettled here, and a lot of them are also secondary migration, meaning they've been resettled in another city like New York or someplace in California, and they moved to Pittsburgh because they've heard that there's lower cost of living here and there is jobs available and they have relatives here. There's also a huge Burmese community. There's a Somalian community. There's a Burundi community, an Iraqi community. And
which parts of the city are these folks settled in?
The biggest, the one part of the city where is Natalia Rudiak's district, which is the southern part of the city. And that's, you know, that's one place where you've seen it in the census change. And if you go up and down the main streets there, you'll see new businesses. And, you know, they're also in the rest of Allegheny County, which is interesting. I mean, it's, you know, my stories focus on health, but there's definitely been a shift in a lot of other areas. I talked to some folks at the Allegheny Intermediate Unit, and they were talking about how some districts have never had an ESL teacher, and now they have to share one teacher within four districts. So a teacher will have to spend part of each day at each school because there's students there that they never had to serve before.
Do they have enough teachers that know these languages? For example, who knew that in Pittsburgh 5 years ago you might need somebody that could speak the different languages spoken in Iraq, for example?
Yeah, well, actually, and this surprised me, they said that the teachers don't necessarily need to speak the languages because there's so many of them. And even, you know, within the Congolese community, there will be about six different languages that are spoken. So there's no way that anybody can say, I speak all of those languages in addition to every other language. So they don't all speak those languages, which makes it a lot more challenging.
So what is coming next in this series that people should be tuned in for or looking for online, other stories and ways that the community can get engaged?
So we have five more stories that will be running this month, one next Monday, the following Monday, and then three the final week of January. And we are looking, you know, we're still working on the story, so we are looking for people to share their stories. So if there is anybody who's had experiences either as a provider or as somebody who's just tried to go into the system themselves, you know, we encourage them to reach out to us. And we're also hoping to hold some sort of community forum and, you know, sort of play these stories, maybe have them translated for people that don't speak the languages that they're airing in, which is English. We're just looking to sort of get people involved. It's been interesting. The story ran this morning, and I've already gotten a number of emails from people. So I think, you know, there's definitely possibility here for engagement.
And William Heisel, as far as this very broad project that you're overseeing, for you, what comes next or what can you tell us about that our audience would be interested in?
Sure. So on Thursday, Mundo Hispanico, which is one of the other partners from Atlanta, they will have a story that will go out both in Spanish and in English, and that will be on the websites of the different partners, including WESA, that will focus on the mental health effects of deportation. Again, that's an area that's been well studied, looking at what happens when families are broken apart and some of the effect, depression, anxiety, and other issues that can be faced by families, often who are low income to begin with and who are left here, children born in the U.S. or, you know, children who themselves are undocumented, and then what the effects can be. And then, as Erica said, the series will go from there. We have some stories coming out about detention centers and the health effects of people who are put into detention, and we'll be looking at the attempts to get immigrants into healthcare programs like the Affordable Care Act programs and how that's going and some other issues over the course of the series.
Erica Barris, William Heisel, thank you so much for joining us today on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Coming up, our sports guy Bob Dvorak on Penn State's search for a new head football coach. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.